Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
So here we are at the 5th of January, and I was saying, well, how am I going to say hello to you guys? Should I say Happy New Year? But then I said, you know, I always find that people after about the 1st or the 2nd, when they say Happy New Year, it's like people have nothing to say. So I'm going to simply say hi and tell you what we're up to. Today we're going to at least start the show with focusing on, you know, I think the word that makes me puke more than any other related to career is the word networking. We've heard it for 30 years. You know, everybody knows you should do it. Unless you're a natural schmoozer, you hate doing it. And but I figured I would be remiss on this show about work if I didn't at least do a little segment on advanced networking. Not the same old crap you heard all the time. You know, like you got to go. You can't just exchange business cards. You really got to create deep connection, and you know, you've got to use online, and you got to do it in person. Something more advanced than that. But also the ticklish heart questions, like, what if you really can't stand it? And you know, unfortunately, in today's America, if you don't schmooze, you lose. You know, if you don't network, you lose. It's not what you know, it's who you know. I hate that crap, but it's America. It's the reality of America. Maybe it's the reality of the world. I don't know. I have enough trouble keeping up with the Bay Area, let alone the whole country. So, but what's the advanced stuff? What is the advanced mini course about networking? Well, that's what we're going to talk about today. Let's say you have Asperger's and you're really terrified of going out. What do you do? What if you simply hate it? You feel you want to focus on the substance and not focus on the steak, not the sizzle, but you know you don't want your career to go in the toilet. What do you do? Who's better equipped to help us wade through the morass of networking crapola and replace it with networking cognoscenti brilliance than Susan Rowan?
Oh my God, cognoscenti brilliance with a little touch of crapola as a spice to spice it up.
I will take my pruning shears. This is Rose Pruning Time. I will prune away the crapola and interrupt you and make you talk about
that
what's fresh and important.
You know, the one that you say, you know, schmooze or you lose, I wanted to call my conversation book Schmooze or Lose. And I'll never forget, my agent and the editor in New York said, oh, we can't call a book that. This was 1997. Why can't you? Oh, people in the rest of the world, the rest of the United States won't know what that means. So my line for those people in New York was, you live on an island, get off of it. Because people know what it means. The only problem is they know a pejorative. They don't really know what schmooze means. So
we'll get to that in a minute, but I feel I need to introduce, you know, lest your listeners have not heard of Susan Rowan, they should know who I brought on the show is not Chopped Liver. She is the author of the best-selling books How to Work a Room and Secrets of Savvy Networking. She's been featured in the New York Times, USA Today, Chronicle, Usual Suspects, been on the Today Show, CNN, all that. She was on this show a while back, long time ago, and it is time for, so to speak, an encore. So now, formally, may I introduce you, Susan Rowan. Welcome back to Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you, Marty. And I've, reading your columns, kept up with you, and for those listening, you know, that's how you do it. You stay in touch with people, you see something, you give a little comment, because if we don't do that, when it comes time to come back to people, we feel uncomfortable. And it's the investment in time where there's a connection. And I know it sounds like crapola, but all the people that have said to me, how do I get back in touch? And I want to say to them, why'd you lose touch?
Well, truthfully, like a guy like me who does not, you didn't contact me for years. I didn't contact you. My wife, actually. How did you get back on the show? My wife and I were chatting, and she said, you know, that really is very important. I still love that book, How to Work a Room. You know, should you have Susan Rowan back on the show? I said, an idea. So we did not schmooze. We did not connect.
But I did email you. I mean, you said something. I remember I sent you an email because you wrote something or was something, and I wrote you a little note saying, oh, this is great, et cetera. So
that was after I contacted you. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So what I want to deal with people like me for the moment, and because I know there's a lot of us who really feel like if we are going to network, it's an emphasis on the steak rather than the sizzle. We want to boost our career, whether we're looking for a job or we're currently employed. We would rather do our work than say hi to somebody, ask about how the kids are doing, how was the quinceañera, you know, smile and dial. What do you say to those folks?
Get over
it.
Why? Because that is, you know, I just read this and I applied this to what I've written. How to work a room is about going to an event. Networking is a process. And it's the way I've defined it. It's a life process. If you really think all I'm going to do for my job is network, you know what? Life is about networking if you understand that it's a life process. For people who see it as a career skill and don't embrace it as a part of your life, you're making a mistake.
You say it's a life process. So I guess let me try to take your side. You can treat it as a valuable part of life, even if you are work-oriented, for the following reasons. Even if you want nothing from it, it is a chance for you to give back.
Exactly.
It is a chance for you to gain other perspectives other than what you normally, you're in your normal narrow work circle. It is a chance to, if you really are good and you want to promulgate what you do and have perhaps a more responsible position or whatever, you are, by networking in person or online, you are making it more likely that you'll be hired for a more influential position, get more clients. So it is actually, even for a very utilitarian person, it's actually a very practical thing to do. Does that make sense?
Yes, because, you know, we didn't start using the word networking to describe this kind of work process till the late 70s. It was a very pejorative, and it was a very... Yes.
I still think it is, but...
Yeah, it is. It is pejorative. I'm listening to you. It sounds pejorative.
Right.
And it was very gender biased, because it started with women noticing that men network to get each other jobs, and women want, oh, we must start doing that. So it really has a history that most people don't understand. But it's a life issue. In fact, when I wrote The Secrets of Savvy Networking, I had a moment of awareness, and I thought, and that's how I started the book. It was, no room at the inn. Do you perhaps know of a barn with a manger? You know, we have asked for help and referrals and helped each other. It's a process. The barn raisings in our history were the community coming together and help each other. So you see, if you look at it as, oh my God, this is about my job and I have to do this to get ahead and blah, blah, it becomes unnerving. If you say, this is the way I want to live my life because I'm going to the barn raising because someone's barn burned down and I'm going to help them, then you have a different essence. And by the way, who hasn't recommended a restaurant, a car mechanic, a nail technician, a realtor? If you've done that, then you have already lived the life of networking.
That is one of the best ways to network, by the way, to make a referral for something that they want. If you can, in your conversations online or in person, look for opportunities to recommend a resource, that's not threatening them, it's not giving them unwanted advice, it's not just looking for what you want, but by giving, and it doesn't take a lot of time or effort, but if you, you say, you know, you said you're moving your mother into your house with you. I just came across this great article on how to move your mom in with your house with you. That's the kind of thing that is networking, that is easy for you, beneficial, and whether or not it pays back, it's good, right?
Exactly. First of all, if you always look for payback, that's not networking.
It doesn't work because most times you don't get back. The no BS truth is, most people give a heck of a lot more than they ever will get back.
Exactly. And here's the other part of it. Now, in thinking about this interview, this is something I said years ago on another radio station. I thought it was one of my best reverse psychology sales pitches. There is a difference between the shy person, which 90% of us self-identify as we go to an event, the person that you mentioned with Asperger's, the person who's really uncomfortable. There is a major difference in how we conduct our work life from those who like people and those who truly don't like people. And I sometimes have to laugh how many people say, oh, I'm really a people person. And I look at them and go, you got to be kidding. They've done nothing that shows me there's anything about you that likes people. If you don't like people, this will be all process and all technique. That's not the person I'm talking to.
Well, let's talk about that. I always like to find the hard part. First of all, let our listeners know, listening to Work with Marty Nemco, my guest is Susan Rowan, the eminent networking queen, author of How to Work a Room and Secrets of Savvy Networking. Let's say I know somebody who is a client of mine who really doesn't like people. She really likes to be alone. She spends almost all of her time alone, except when she's working. But it's hurt her dramatically in her career. She's quite a hermit. And she's even what you would call borders Asperger's, which would, I guess, mean she's not socially phobic so much as she's just preternaturally shy and prefers her own company to that of people all the time, almost all the time. Is there any advice, if I were her, what would you honestly, no BS, we will say you and I were talking, if I were that woman, what would you say to her?
Well, the truth is, I think that's beyond my scope. I think someone who really has that issue, and I've written it in my books, for those who just think of themselves as shy, don't go take the pills from your having anxiety. Go buy How to Work a Room. Read it. You know, give me a call. I could give you a couple of hints. For someone who really is at that level, I think you need to talk to someone who really is qualified, I would say a psychologist. I'm not that person.
And I'll tell you, you know what I told her to tell you the truth? I said, I think in the end, I guess I'm somebody who has got a healthy disrespect for psychotherapists. I've seen too many of them not make enough improvement in somebody. I encouraged her to accept herself. She's got some great abilities, great skills. She's got a fabulous heart in her own way. She's a good person. And I said, you know what? Some of the greatest people of all time have been loners. It is not a dirty word. And yes, if you were more mainstream in how social you were, I would encourage you to do more networking. But really, it's so the opposite of who you are. It's like I cannot draw more than stick figures. So if somebody was going to work with me forever on how to improve my stick figure drawing, it's not the best use of my time. I'd say, darling, accept yourself for who you are.
Because there's so many things she can do that, you know, the opposite is true. There are people that are asked to work from home for their company and work remotely, and they're the people that need to be at the cappuccino machine instead of the water cooler. Mm-hmm. That's very hard on them. But the person who can work alone, there are so many people where that is what you do. And by the way, the big tests. Oh, I've taken one of those tests, and someone turned to me and said, oh my goodness, you have whatever the number is. I really regenerate on my own.
What kind of test? Oh, you talk? Oh, like the Myers-Briggs?
The Myers-Briggs. You're always around people. I go, oh no, I spend a lot of time alone to regenerate. So spending time alone to regenerate, to think, to cogitate, that's good. But the truth is, for your career, for your life, you know, when they look at, now that I'm at a certain age, when they look at what keeps you healthy, Marty, it's having a social network of people.
My analysis of that is there's a correlation-causation problem. Of course, people who get together more often with people are healthier. But what causes what? If you are sick, if you're losing your memory, if you are not feeling good, that's going to make you want to interact less with other people. It's not that interacting with other people makes you healthier. It's that healthier people tend to want to interact with others. Those who are not feeling well want to be alone.
Well, and it's so funny because I just came across the research again, the corollary to that. Actually, I made a contribution to the book, 65 Things to Do When You Retire, is that the people who were social as they retired, they had less colds. So if you don't want to get a cold, this is the way. Because probably being around people increases your immune system. And so it's so interesting. And of course, it depends what university and who does the research. But I think our goal is to say to people, it's not even up for discussion. There is something you have to do because people, if you're dealing with people, you ought to deal with people at the best possible level that you're capable of and stretch yourself a little.
Let's be specific. Let's talk about you. Really you,
me.
Susan.
If
you were thinking about something that you do that you say, this is kind of clever, what you do, and again, not nefarious networking, but let's say just ethical, fine network. What's something that Susan herself maybe did today, last week, whatever, that is a kind of an advanced networking technique that Susan herself used?
I just did it with you. And this sounds so strange. That should be our big lead-in. And, you know, you call it nefarious networking, and I know people who are, I call them the bulldozers in networking, and they are purposeful. They got an agenda printed on their forehead, and you see them in the room. And by the way, if you can tell anyone is working a room, they are doing it wrong. That means they're overdoing it. It's really about being easygoing and comfortable around people. But I just did that. I got an email from a colleague who's an executive. I saw what you do. I said to Marty, tell me what you're still doing, catching up. And what did I do? I said, Marty, there's a guy that is looking for blah, blah, blah. And then you and I talked about how we, the kind of coaching. So it's, if you don't have that network to go to help the network you have, you're making a mistake. What they found in, when Tom Stanley, before he even wrote his millionaire book, he wrote about...
That's the millionaire next door.
That millionaire next door. But he did research on millionaires for years. And it was in Success Magazine, 1985, before some of you were born. But anyway, he found what was the number one thing that these people had in common. And this is also a word you might have to look up. They had huge Rolodexes. Mm-hmm. They knew people, and they knew who they knew. You know, I wrote Savvy Networking. I'm from Chicago because we had methods of dealing with people who weren't savvy in their, quote, networking. Big River, cement shoes. So it's all about how do you treat people? What is it at the highest level? What's your savvy level? And one thing, do you pick up the phone for other people? When I wrote Secrets of Savvy Networking, I realized there are two kinds of people in this world. Red tape cutters. You know, I got a cousin who's got an in-law who's got a neighbor. Let me see what I could do. And then they're the red tape creators. You know, it's not in our policy. We can't do this. I don't think I can. I don't know. You want to be a red tape cutter.
Multiple choice. Give you two choices. You can either give me another practical thing that you actually did yourself as what you think would be a good advanced networking tip.
Okay,
to share with us.
I'm going to do that.
Please do.
Okay, so I get a CBS Money Watch online. I read, and I do this a lot, but I read this wonderful column, and it just totally resonated with me, of course, because it's something I wrote, you know, in one of my books or one of my columns. But I took the time to write a comment on that blog post, tracked down the person who wrote it, told him I really liked it, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
And he wrote me back. And then what would be it? Let's talk. Now, this is what I would like to tell everyone networking. It's very retro, but it is so hot. It will set you apart from the crowd. Take out your cell phone or your smartphone and actually use the phone app to make a call. Be different. If everyone's emailing, texting, poking, posting, he picked up the phone. He called me. We had a great conversation. We have now become friends. I've recommended something to him. He said, let me thank you for doing it. What can I do for you? It's not just, I read it and I liked it. For God's sakes, let people know.
Here I agree completely. I'm a guy who's not at all tech-averse. I am fairly active in my blog and my Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. But I believe that ultimately, that the phrase I've been using lately is have coffee, not the cloud. Coffee, not all the cloud is all the online stuff. I'm finding it with my clients that they are having more success in enhancing their career by following this rule. It might not be such a bad resolution for you to have for 2013, which is make your agenda to have coffee with one person a week, every week. I don't care how much you're on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Do that. Does that make sense?
Well, you're talking to the woman who started Face-to-Face Friday on Twitter. I started, I think, about a year and a half, 2 years ago. Enough with the follow Friday. Face-to-Face Friday. I say this is the perfect day to detach from your gadgets and see people in person. A coffee, a beer, whatever. And for people that are far away, pick up the phone and talk to them. Another case in point, speaker bureau person. We'd been emailing, staying in touch. One day, a number of years ago, a Friday afternoon, probably 5 o'clock in New York, I picked up the phone and I said to her, sounding awfully like my mother, enough with the email. I want to hear how you are doing.
Good. I want to try something. You know, obviously, as a career and life coach type person, I spend a lot of time teaching people the art of networking. I'm going to give a 2-minute 3-minute mini lecture that I might give to a client. And then I'm going to want you to react. And this is going to be like the world's shortest course, advanced course in networking. And you tell me what you like and don't like about it, Amplify. First of all, let's take an example of going to a conference. You make a big investment in going to a conference, costs a lot of money. You know you should be networking or whatever. Here is how to make the most of a conference. Number one, before you go, you look very often. There's a list of attendees, if at all, in advance. You look at them and see yourself. Put a star next to the names of the half dozen people or whatever that you'd like to know. Google them. Learn a little bit about them. Not much. Make a couple of notes. If you don't have that in advance, do it in your hotel room. These days, every laptop has got internet connection, so that you're ready. When you go and when you're at the wine and cheese things or in line for breakfast or whatever, you're certainly looking at name tags. You don't have to only talk to those six people, but when you do, yes, you start with what's called an environmental comment, something about the long line, the weather, the conference, who is speaking, have you been here before, something about what you call an environmental conference. And then, very quickly after that, you try really to identify a person's hot button. Everybody has one or more. So if they're at this conference, it could be they're trying to get ahead in their career. It could be they're getting old and they're trying to pass on the next generation. Maybe it's their children. Maybe it's their family. Maybe it's the Golden State Warriors. But you're going to ask a couple of questions to try to tease out what they're like. So so what brought you to this conference? And just listen really carefully. Ask more questions. Reveal some things about yourself. Don't just ask questions because you're going to sound like you're interrogating. And then at the end of it, you put your hand out when you're ready to end the conversation, because you don't want to dominate them. Even if you like them, you say, it was great talking. Maybe we'll get together again some other time. Is there any, or maybe we can see each other later in the conference. Voila, or exchange business cards. It's not quite as simple as that, but that's my 2-minute version. What do you like and not like about that?
First of all, you just did and for our listening audience, a great synopsis of a 24-year-old book, How to Work a Room. That was all in the book. In this day and age, what I say when I speak to the organizations is, anyone that says that they walk into a room, a conference, a meeting, a party cold, is not doing their work. First of all, there's no way. You can Google people. There's a website. You can find out anything. You go to LinkedIn. You should never go in anywhere cold. So you just did a synopsis of How to Work Room. One of the things I will say, that is exactly what it is, but I want to describe that networking is different from working a room. Working a room, and How to Work a Room, for those of you that don't know, has sold about 1.2 million copies, is really how you go into every event. By the way, it can include a family reunion, which could be more nerve-wracking than most.
Right.
Or a high school reunion, because I'm going to a really big one in May.
Because you look great. I hate going to my reunions, because I know how I hear about all the reunions. They always talk about people who got older looking, and everybody makes fun of them. I've never gone because I'm afraid of them saying
that
about me.
Don't be afraid of them. You know what, Marty? The truth is, you have no... Here, audience, this is radio. Marty, you got no wrinkles. Show up at the reunion.
Go ahead. Anyway, go ahead.
Wait, I just want to point out, do you notice what we just did? Audience, we are having this conversation. We change the subject. We go back and forth. We get back on point. We're tangential. You are going to go everywhere and have conversations that you can't plan. You can only plan what you'd like to have happen. You can never plan the other person's response. So what you want to do is go and be open, be informed, know what's going on in the world. And that's really what's important.
What happened there, what was a real takeaway, was a little bit of personal revelation. Admitting that I'm shy or self-conscious, and I'm not a shy person, that I'm embarrassed about my aging, is the kind of thing that builds relationship. And I encourage, California is really, there's almost a primacy on keeping a veneer, or maybe it's almost just an American value, keeping the veneer, being positive, being upbeat. But having these little revelations about your concerns about, whether it be about aging or about your, even admitting, you just lost your job or whatever, I really think that builds relationships, and we crave authenticity, and it is gravely lacking in America.
Well, what you're talking about is being vulnerable.
Yes.
And I always say, give people something to talk about. So I walked into this interview, and normally I'd wear a gorgeous pin, but now I'm wearing actually a button, and that button actually has the Rose Bowl, because Marty knows I went to the Rose Bowl. My two guys, godgrandsons, played for Stanford. Well, anyone who's known me longer than 5 minutes knows. And why wouldn't you give people something to talk to you about? When you have you know, grandparents that are aging or parents that are aging, that's something in common with people. You don't have to worry about what's their hot button in business so I could jump on them to do business. Find something in common or something that you can be empathetic towards. But how to work a room is about working a room where you're not overworking. It's about going into any venue, which could also be a 49er game, where you circulate, you meet people, you have conversations, you start the beginning of what will be relationships and trust building.
You were saying that there's a difference between the working room and networking, but before we get to that, I want a critical part about the schmoozing part. Many people know about making the first comment, you know, the environmental comment about the room or the event, but many people get stuck from there. What do you, if I were your client, you do some coaching of people who are terrified of working a room or networking. And I said, it's fine. I can say, oh, gee, lovely event and the food's wonderful and all that. But what do I say after that?
That's why I wrote, what do I say next? Because people actually said to me, oh, my God, I know how to do that. What do I say next? Well, you do have to build the conversation a little bit more. Because if you switch so quickly, again, it will look like I'm overworking the room. I'm that bulldozer of business.
What would you do if I said...
What you do is, when you are a little uncomfortable, you do say, what brought you here? How did... Oh, that's very... That's what you do. Did you always... What I say to people is, did you always know you wanted to do that? How did you prepare? I found out from the former head of Warner Books, he never even envisioned it. What would you do if you'd known you'd be here? I remember asking him, and he said, I would have taken more accounting courses. And what an interesting thing. You know, show interest. But here's what I want to caution against. How to Win Friends and Influence People has been a great help to so many people. But Dale Carnegie did a little disservice when he said, ask people questions because let them talk about their favorite subject themselves. You ask too many questions and you look like what you said in your little pitch, an interrogator. You look nosy. You bring nothing to the banquet. I opened What Do I Say Next with the banquet of banter is a potluck. You better bring something to it more than questions. It's the stories. We love storytellers.
So it's a good idea before you go to an event, if you're not naturally good at it, to have ready, almost, you don't literally rehearse or just say, okay, I'm going to tell, have ready to tell this story about, for example, maybe about your amusement about Al Gore saying that, Big Oil is terrible and then taking $100 million of Big Oil money to buy, turn to Current TV and Al Jazeera. But having three little stories, whether they be personal
that's
or otherwise.
That's what we say in How to Work a Room. Back in the day, it was read the paper. I don't care if you read it online, in print, whatever. Have three things to talk about. I don't care if you're going to talk about sports, if you're going to talk about entertainment. Have something that's happening to everyone. People denigrate weather. Oh, that's an idiotic thing. Really? If you're freezing your butt off in the middle of what should be summer, that's what people are talking about because it's happening to everyone. It's what you have in common. Have three things to talk about. But you know what? People, besides those stories, bring, this is the Roanne, bring who you are to what you do. People connect with who you are. What you do is secondary. Bring the stories. Bring your family. Bring your grandmother. Bring your dog. You ever see the movie The Big Kahuna?
No.
The Big Kahuna is a great one I talk to salespeople about. The two guys, Danny DeVito and Kevin Spacey, they want to get that Big Kahuna at the trade show. Because if they get him, they get the big business. But they bring the nice but lad, a somewhat schlubby scientist who did the invention. And he goes out on the floor while they're planning. And they come back, who'd you talk to? I talked to this man, he had lost his dog. You wasted your time to talk about a man who lost a dog? Show me the card. And of course, it was the Big Kahuna, who was so connected to the young man who was interested about the pet. So, you know, be nice to everyone. Marty, you aren't going to like this because isn't as a big a tactic. You be nice to everyone in a room. Why? You never know. You don't know who's who they're related to, who their son or daughter or mother or cousin is. So while you're looking for that big name, be really nice to the person that doesn't have it.
Of course, being nice is not just so that you can get something back, but there is a cosmic wisdom in just trying to, you know, do good things for the world, random acts of kindness. My engineer, Joanne Marr, wrote me a little note, and she said, very interesting kind of networking. She was at a New Year's Eve party, and there was a guy, and he had his smartphone on. And he actually, they were chatting, he takes out his phone, and he starts punching in numbers and letters or whatever, and he says, oh, I see. He did a Google search on her and learned all about the wonderful career she's had in public broadcasting and whatever, and that was a way to really create amazing connection. Now, talk about a blend of high tech and high touch.
Well, luckily it was that, but mostly, you know, when I put out my holiday do's and don'ts, it's put your phone away. Unless you can do that and do some connection with the person. When you are talking to someone face-to-face and you take out your phone because you've gotten the little beep that someone else is in contact with you, you are being as rude as you could be, as if you were shaking their hands and looking over their shoulder for who else in the room has a better title.
I don't think we fully got to what you were going about 5 or 7 minutes ago before we got on these little sidetracks. You wanted to make more clear the real distinction between the working a room / schmoozing and networking. Why is that difference important? Tell us the difference and why is it important.
Well, because working room is an event. It's an event, whether it's a meeting, it's a party, it's whatever. It's what you do at an event to meet, connect, and Marty, I am going to call you on this. When you say schmoozing, you've got a tone that our listeners are going, oh, that sounds terrible. Let me tell you, and you know the Yiddish definition. The clear definition, thanks to Leo Rostin, is schmoozing is easygoing, connected conversation. It is not done with a purpose to get me a job. It doesn't have a higher plane. It really is about conversation. So what I want to encourage people is be the conversationalist. Listen. Bring your stories. You know, people tell you what they want to talk about if you listen. Bring people with you.
Before we get back to the distinction between the schmoozing, not negatively connoted, and networking, I want to invite the callers. We're going to take a call or two from the dear listeners. So if you've been listening to this and you say, yeah, but it's not so easy, or yeah, that's not a good idea. If you have a question for Susan Rowan or me, I invite you to call now. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Now finally tell us.
Okay,
more about
and networking is a process. It's, you know, I've said this to people, you know, relationships don't happen overnight. They happen over time. So networking is a process. You meet someone. By the way, there are people who are fabulous networkers. They will follow up, send you the article, send you the email, give you the lead. But you invite them to an event that's important even for them. And like 90% of us who self-identify as shy, that is totally unnerving. And by the way, to me, often I'm going, oh my God, what am I doing here? So you could be a great networker and still find it daunting. You can also be a great room worker. You could be the person that is such a smooth, meet everyone, charming, but you can have the networking skills of a gnat. And I don't mean that as a first name. That's G-N-A-T. You can have a networking skills of that because you don't have follow-up. The person that really is a networker is the person who has follow-up, the person who stays in touch, the person who says, oh my God, you're that... Let me do an introduction. Want to know what I do that really has changed? I am now the world's best e-introducer. Oh, my God, Ted, you need to meet Allison. Mm-hmm. And I write an email they could put on their tombstones. Mm. You introduce people with enthusiasm. Here's what I say. It was in all my books, but definitely Secrets of Savvy Networking. I did a chapter called Networker, Networker, Make Me a Match. Be a matchmaker. Do e-intros.
Mm-hmm. Very important.
It's so important. You know, if nothing else, it will make you feel good. It'll help someone else. They'll help someone else. You're teaching people. I'm a former school teacher. This building that we're in, my former husband taught high school here. Teach people how to behave by role modeling it.
Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco with Susan Rowan. What is your question or comment for her? Hello, it's your turn on the air.
Oh, me?
Yes.
Oh, I've got a severe disfigurement that, in all honesty, makes me quite repulsive. And I notice when I'm talking to people in the room, they kind of just look down all the time. How can I get over that?
Great. Do you want to take on? Go ahead.
This is very hard. And if nothing else, I hope that all my years of teaching and being, that we need to teach the rest of us how to be much more open to people.
I'm a huge believer in actually leading with your disadvantage. So my way would be something like this. Even if I were the elephant man and I had elephantitis and I looked like a monster, I really think two things. Number one, as Helen Gurley Brown said who was the founder of Cosmopolitan.
Yeah.
She says after 40, it all comes down to posture. I think if you walk in, he's gone. Well, maybe it's relevant to everybody, so I'll give that advice anyway. If you walk in with pride, even if your face is as ugly as sin, and you smile, and you then perhaps when you see them looking down, I don't know if I had the courage to do, but I would try to practice this. I would say something like, "I know I'm not the handsomest guy in the room. My name is Marty Nemko. I'd like to meet you." You know, doing that, being wearing yourself, whether it be your obesity or your ugliness or your age, with a certain sense of self-acceptance, will give signals to the other person that, wow, this is an interesting person, and it may net be a plus. What do you think, Susan?
Well, I think what you did something else is you did it with a little humor.
Right.
And I think that goes a long way. I've had people say to me, what do? My hands are sweaty. I can't shake hands. Or I've had carpal tunnel syndrome. You tell people right up front, so I agree with you. You have an accent from another country. You say it first. But you said it with a little humor. And I think that's where a little humor cuts that tension. And then, you know what? Call me old Pollyanna. Shame on us for not giving people a chance.
Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. Susan Rowan, what's your question for her?
Yes, good morning. I'm wondering about, I tend to try to network with people who have higher degrees and have engineering degrees, and I don't. And it's really hard. Sometimes they just turn off if you don't have that. How do you manage that? How do you work that?
Well, to me, that's, you know, I get that asked a lot. What if you're not where people are, and I want to talk to people who are there? People say that about the doctors, the engineers. You know, you have to do your homework before you go. Find out what they're interested. Why are they there? What is the theme of that conference or meeting that you're going to?
You know, I've also found that many people with higher degrees suffer tremendously from the imposter syndrome. They've got this degree that says that they're an expert, but really so often what you learn in that PhD program, and I'm speaking from someone who's got, as from a position of someone who's got one, really is not that relevant in the real world. You know your little stupid little narrow research area, but you're more insecure than most, because if you're high enough of an achiever to want to get a PhD, your whole self-esteem is tied in with your accomplishment. So they may be really insecure. So what you may want to do is move the conversation away from their little stupid PhD-ish area, instead to something that you know about. It may not have anything to do with academia, but you may know something that they would find fascinating and be relieved not to have to talk about PhD crap. What's your honest reaction to that?
Well, interestingly enough, you know what? People with PhDs, even doctors, they have other things they're interested in. They might have been on the rowing team. Find out what they're interested in, something different that doesn't have to do with.
Dear caller, what's your honest reaction to any of this?
Oh, I love that. I never thought about that. So okay. Thank you so much.
And I love that you called. Thank you very much for calling. Really, you know, I really do think we live in this designer label society that not only values silly coach purses, but values very often silly PhDs that teach you arcana that nobody ever needs to know. Don't be intimidated by that crap. I could never in a million years have said that if I myself didn't have a PhD, from Berkeley no less. But having been there, I know that very often the emperors have no clothes. Love the strengths that you bring to the table, whether it's your loving heart or your knowledge of gardening or whatever the hell it is, and you'll ultimately, I think, be more successful in the world and certainly be less fearful and unnecessarily fearful. Okay, thanks a lot for the call. Let's take one more call. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. Susan Rowan, what is your question for her?
Hi, Marty and Susan, thanks. I appreciate the last comment. I have a very close, intimate friend who's a world expert on a particular topic, very sought after, and For years, I asked him to just come out of his ivory tower, and he finally started to, and he's very much benefiting from that. Anyway, my question is, when you're in a room and the time is short, a lot of times there's events and there's only maybe 30 minutes total to network, and if you find yourself talking with someone, it's clear that that they are pretty much standing alone, not very connected, and they're not very talkative. Things aren't moving so well, and you enjoy personally, you know, with them, and you know how to connect, and you enjoy. You can talk about their, you know, tell stories, talk about your personal life. I'm really good at that. I love people, everyone. And so the thing is, sometimes what happens is that there's time is so short, and I know that there's other people there that I want to talk with. And sometimes I'll just say, well, let's network some more. And a lot of events, people will be okay with that. We both want to mingle some more with other people, but some people seem really offended at that.
Well, that's how you say it and what you say. That's why in How to Work a Room and in all my talks to my clients, we do a how do we exit, and the word here is graciously.
How do you do it?
And one way is, okay, you're talking to someone. What you do is you interrupt yourself, not them. So you interrupt yourself. The second thing you do is say, because you have been listening, hey, it was really great to learn about or talk about. And you, a phrase, a prepositional phrase, you summarize something you talked about so they know you were listening. Maybe we could talk further. If they haven't given you a card, this is when you say, do you have a card? If they don't ask you for the card. And I'm of the school of don't be terse, don't save nanoseconds. You'll be dead and you've saved an hour. So use the extra words, may I please offer you one of mine. You've got their card. And what you do is, if you say you're going to do something later, you have to do it. Oh, I'm going to send you that article about. And you excuse yourself, but what you do is you walk a quarter of the room away over to another group or another person standing alone. And always with a smile, always with great graciousness. Another thing to do, and this is what's so nice, is if you're with someone who you know they're shy, they're not meeting people, what you can do is the bring along, which is, hey, I see someone. I think they look familiar. Or I see Marty. Oh, have you met Marty? Why don't you come with me? Let me introduce you. Make the room work for other people as well. Introduce people. Be the matchmaker.
I think those are great. I want to add only one other thing. Sometimes, you know, Susan said that she didn't want to waste a nanosecond, but sometimes I don't want to go through all that long harangue, and so sometimes if it's just somebody I've had a brief interaction with, or I'm sick until I find he or she is long-winded and boring, I'll simply stick my hand out and say, it was great talking with you. Put a smile on my face, and that's it, and move on. Is any of that likely to help you, Susan, on the phone?
Yes, totally. But sometimes, if that person is standing alone and not very talkative, you leave them alone again. So a lot of times, I said, "Hey, do you want to join me to network more? Let's join that group, or let's see who else is here." Or, like you said, I'd like to introduce you to so and so. I've done that a lot. But if sometimes when I bring that person along, they could. They have the same behavior in that.
Sure. Whoever, I'm going to interrupt you here for time. I got it.
Yeah.
You know, you are not Jesus. You are not God.
Or a social worker.
Yes.
But
you can, you could do what you reasonably can. You don't have this lifetime indebted in this person you talked to for 2 minutes. It's great. I think Susan's idea of bringing her, say, hey, come join me. I think I know those people go a quarter way around the room. And if they're continuing to be shy, so what? They're probably going to be still very grateful. And if not, you've done your part. You've done more than your part. You already reached the 99th percentile of networking good people. So, you should feel
not
good
your
about
job.
That. Right. Anyway, thanks a lot for the call. I want to ask you this. You know, the truth is that a lot of people are reluctant to go over to somebody at a meeting or network or pick up the phone because they're terrified of rejection, or of sounding stupid, or being imposing, or whatever. How do you deal with all those negative messages that are deeply embedded in people's fear of networking?
Well, that actually was one of the five roadblocks in How to Work a Room, is we fear rejection. So what we do is we impose rejection on ourselves by not trying. We assume that it's what we have to do is say, you know what? What's the worst thing that could happen? So I go over to someone that isn't as enamored of me as Marty was. And the worst that happens is they're not very warm to me. I can't make them like me. And I've actually had it happen, much to my chagrin. What I do, I never know. Here's one thing I want to share with you. You may think they're rejecting you. What might be on their brain is that their mother just fell and they have to make a decision. And it may have nothing to do with you. So be nice, because the next time you see him, everything might be fine.
Susan, here's an honest revelation on my part. I have been rejected a ton in my life, because I am very intense. I'm not the best-looking guy in the world.
You're adorable.
Yeah, right. And I can be a know-it-all. And so I am not reluctant to go and, quote, network, to go talk to people. It really comes down to not trying to deflect, oh, really not, maybe it's their mother. You know, I accept that most people are not going to like me. I'm just, really, but I accept that that's who I am. I am well-intentioned. I think there are some people who really do love me a lot. And I just accept that because I'm a rather different person than most, that most people are not going to like me, and I have to accept that and celebrate the fact that some do like me, and I feel good about myself. So it's a matter, I believe, that the way you overcome fear of rejection is getting comfortable with yourself, self-acceptance, and not so much expecting a lot. It's not a one-loss record where you've got to have a high percentage of people liking you. It comes down to either saying, okay, I need to improve this if I can, but I can't be less intense. I can't be better looking. And so I have to accept those immutables and say, that's what I give to the world. And as long as I'm well-intentioned, it's good enough. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I think self-acceptance is... that's the best part. Like you say, walk in the room, it's posture, but there's also the confidence. But it's also coming from the attitude is, I am here, and this is going to sound, I know Marty's going to just go nuts when I say this. I think you should go everywhere to have a good time. Hmm. And I'll tell you why.
Why would I go nuts at that?
Well, because I don't know. Because if you go everywhere, whether it's the meeting, the conference, the board meeting, the trade show, the family reunion, the high school reunion, to have a good time, that is what will emanate from you. And guess what? People want to be around the person having a good time. Here's what I say to people. Go, okay, Susan, how do I get in a group? I walked in and everyone's in a group. Well, maybe I'm a little Pollyannish. Pick the group of three or four people that's already laughing. What, you want to go up to the people that look like they all have bunions? I don't think so. Go to the group that's having a good time.
I'm very Talmudic. I always like to take the other side. I'm a serious guy by now. I can have my moods where I'm really upbeat and fun, but my core nature is very serious. So if I'm going to an event and I want to reduce my chances of getting rejected, I actually will go to somebody who looks a little sad or a little quiet. And that will both make me feel like I can be my natural self and maybe also be in a better position to be giving, because those people do not fit in America's ha-ha pub. You know, I have a number of European friends, and they talk about how Americans are preternaturally, the second time I've used the word this time, upbeat and optimistic and whatever, and Europeans make fun of us for that. They think we're silly. And so because I am by nature serious, if I find somebody else who's like that by nature and try to connect with them in that serious way, I am both more natural and they can find a place, maybe that's a person they can interact with who's more like them. Is there anything wrong with that?
No, that's perfect. But here's the point I'd like to make. And this is something, goes back to How to Work Room, and you're talking to the person that's 250 pages and years on it. When you go into a room and you're alone, look for the person standing alone.
Yes, I like that.
That person, first of all, that person is uncomfortable, and I don't care if they're the CEO of the company. What they're really thinking is, oh, my God, I'm the CEO. I must be a dork. No one's talking to me. But you going over, and I've done this in all my programs, when you go over and you start talking to someone standing alone, actually, you make them think that they're valuable and important. That's a gift that cannot
Absolutely.
Be taken away.
It's interesting about talking about very senior people like CEOs. I've been fortunate to have been the career coach to 15 college presidents and a number of C-level people. And I've heard this many times, that it's very lonely at the top.
Mm.
Because they know they can't reveal a lot of stuff about themselves to their coworkers, because their coworkers are fighting for their job. They can't do that. They can't express their vulnerability very much. So if you at a networking event, a company event, whatever, you do, not every one of them, some of them really don't want to reveal crap to you. But if you present yourself as someone who is a great listener and questioner and revealing of some not positive things about yourself, that can often pave the way to a really intimate and wonderful conversation that actually results in tremendous networking benefits, perhaps to both of you.
But what I want to caution you, and I was cautioned this by my speech coach, the eminent Dawn Bernhardt, be very careful about self-deprecation. It's great. I love when someone does it, because then they're a little more vulnerable. But I remember her saying to me, Susan, you're the best-selling author. Too much self-deprecation, people are going to think, why should I be listening to you?
I think we've got to disagree on this one. My wife, who is, you know, very beloved as a superintendent of schools, she says the secret to her being well-liked is constant self-deprecation and building of other people. Not that she turns herself into a basket case, because she's not, but finding, you know, she is on the state...
She finds the balance.
She is on the state technology committee, and she is no techno genius, and she leads her conversation by saying, I am not a techno person. I still don't know half the features on my iPhone or whatever. By doing that, it is disarming, and people are much more open. I know that feminist theory in the 70s was all about women standing up for their power and telling truth to power and being strong and powerful, but I think it's been taken too far. And in the end, I think that balance, to use your term, of vulnerability with not feeling like you're a basket case is far wiser than trying to show how smart or great you are.
I think that is balance. In fact, I made up a word that I actually put in my last book, Face to Face. Is what I call myself, a techno-yutz. I'm an early adopter of all social media, but I am a techno-yutz. I mean, I still take lessons at the Apple Store on how to use a phone, which I've been using a lot of years. But I think, again, I'm not talking about that. I know standing in front of people, and if you keep on putting yourself down, people wonder, why would I do business with you?
Keep putting yourself down so much.
Okay. Not do that.
Let's take one more call.
Sure.
Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco, and the famous author of How to Work a Room and Secrets of Savvy Networking, Susan Rowan. What's your question or comment for her? Hello, it's you. Well, he or she is gone. So let's...
Then we must have given a great answer.
That's right. So let's end by giving you one kind of softball, open-ended question.
Okay.
If there was one thing you have not said yet that is not obvious, that is important about networking or working a room, anything related to the art of connecting, what would you say it is?
Oh, that's a tough one. Well, that we didn't say yet. Well, to me, it's just go in there and be yourself. Unless yourself, by the way, I just had someone say to me, I've had several friends that have dropped me. If you notice that people are not connected to you, then it's time for a little introspection. But go in there, be yourself, be authentic, be a person. I know a lot of people want to have what you said, that veneer of California networking. There really is a
California
difference.
California nice, yes.
Yeah.
There, perfect.
The perfect and all that. But really... Go again. It's really, networking is nothing but a process of living. If you only think of it as work, you are missing the boat, because life is about staying in touch with people. Here's the other thing I think about networking. It's not rocket science. I mean, the advanced networking people, I'll give you one. If you are doing anything with anyone, they've given you a lead. Don't leave people out of the loop. The savvy networkers go back to the person and say, just wanted to let you know I followed up. They're still considering it. And I know this is not genius, but for goodness sakes, say thank you. Appreciate. This is what networking is. You appreciate time, information, leads, ideas, support. It's not always about the job lead. And by the way, if you got married, send your thank you notes already.
And Susan Rowan, I want to say thank you for the information and ideas. Thank you for giving me part of your Sunday here on Work with Marty.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thanks, Marty.
Okay, well, and if you want some more Susan Rowan, she does two things that may be of interest to you. She does one-on-one coaching for people who have real difficulty with networking, working a room, all that kind of stuff. She also does a lot of public speaking. You can find out about both of those at Susan Rowan, spelled a funny way. It's Susan, R-O-A-N-E.com. I'll say it again, Susan, R-O-A-N-E.com. Okay, we only have a couple of minutes left, and I'm going to want to leave that time for me and you. So if you have a question or comment that we have not can have nothing to do with networking, but you've got a career issue that is giving you angst, we're starting out the new year and you want to make 2013 a better year, I would be happy to help you with. I've got time for one call. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, for what I call a 3-minute career makeover or workover, 415-841-4134. I guess we've got a call. Let's go right to the. Let's take that call. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air.
Hi, Marty. Is it me?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Marty. My name is Al, and I'm on the peninsula. I've been listening to your show for a number of years.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm an avid listener, and I appreciated this segment with Susan. I was laid off or fired from a job just the Wednesday before Christmas that I'd been at for a year and a half.
I'm sorry.
In the automotive industry. Mm-hmm. Well, and the reason was, stated was that I was told that I was not happy there at the position.
That's a lie, and no I'm, doubt. Yeah, that's a nice sanitized way of telling you. What do you think was the real reason?
Well, I think that was part of the case. And, Marty, I'm kind of like you. I'm a serious guy. Mm-hmm. But I also, too, I'm a people person as well. So I can be kind of the life of the party, so to speak, but also, too, if things are troubling me or if things are just a little bit too kind of heavy, is that kind of the insides can begin to match the outsides. And so I've kind of had a little bit of a long face for the past couple of weeks, and went to speak with my supervisor about it, and he said, well, you're not happy here. And so I mentioned to him that wasn't the reason that I wanted to speak with him. I just wanted to tell, you know, just kind of give him a checkup as to why I was calling him out or why I had been quiet and focused on my work. I do good work. I'm a technician, but I've done a heck of a lot of customer service and follow-up. That's why this segment was interesting. And this particular job, one of the things that I did is I did a fair amount of customer service that was way outside of what kind of the technical scope was that I was doing. Basically, it interrupted my work and had kind of mentioned to the boss early on, a year and a half ago, it wasn't really the best fit for me to be speaking to his customers kind of on the phone. So.
Okay, all right. So what I'm hearing, my intuition is telling me that him saying that he got rid of you because you were unhappy on the job is, sure, you may have appeared unhappy on the job, but I think that there is more to it. Now, again, bosses especially, are very, very reluctant to be candid and critical because then you're going to fight back. Let's say he said your quality of work was no good or that your coworkers didn't like you or you were not really that good a communicator or you really weren't that good a technician or whatever it is. It's very awkward to say and you can fight back, so they don't do that. But I do want you, as you move forward in 2013 to your next job, to get the greatest gift of all, which is honest feedback. So what I would do, what I would encourage you to do, is to contact your boss, coworkers, and either, you know, in person, have coffee with them and say, I am not looking to fight for my job back, but I want to make sure I'm more successful next time around. Can I ask for some honest feedback that will help me be more successful? If you're reluctant to do that, then use Checkster.com, Checkster.com, which allows you to ask for anonymous feedback, because that there is nothing more great as a gift than true feedback that will help you move forward.
And oh, Marty,
go ahead.
Marty, in fact, on Christmas Eve, several days later into the new week, and then also, too, just recently this last Monday, I have actually called and tried to get discussion on the table saying that I'd probably been let go and things had been misrepresented and that I was willing to sit down and we could kick and scream or whatever is necessary to go forward because this person, the proprietor and I, were kind of on almost friends, and I believe that there was some revealing information that was shared with me that maybe was a little bit and I've spoken with a therapist.
I'm gonna have to interrupt you because we are out of time. I would encourage you to do that without accusing, no blame, nothing about what's under the table. Talk about moving forward to the next job, the feedback you should get. Anyway, thank you very much for the call. As always, I try to squeeze in as much as I possibly can. That's Work with Marty Nemco this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do more 3-minute career makeovers on callers, and I will talk with a key member of President Obama's obviously highly successful messaging team, Dr. Robert Cialdini, on the art of influencing. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we do find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.